Hello, my name is Tony Reid. Welcome to GAY, a radio programme for LGBTI people and their friends on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM and other access radio stations around New Zealand. My guest today is becoming a bit of an annual fixture. Gareth Watkins, accompanied by his husband Roger Smith, is going to give us a selection of the recordings he's made on Pride NZ. For the year 2024, if you remember that. That was before Trump became president, so it all sounds a bit, it all feels a bit distant now. Anyway, welcome back, and let's get on with the recording.
Thank you so much. Well, 2024 was a big year for Pride NZ. We did quite a few recordings, mainly around the Wellington region, so there was a lot of choice to select from. The first clip is back in January 2024, and this was on the 23rd of January, and it was a memorial held in Hagley Park in Christchurch to mark the 60th anniversary of the death of Charles Allen Aberhart. So he was known to his friends and family as Allen, and he was brutally killed by a group of teenagers in 1964. All of the teenagers were later found not guilty of his death. So this memorial was the first time the Aberhart family had spoken publicly about Allen, which is quite remarkable given that it was 60 years. And it was also the first time for many of them to actually go to Hagley Park where he died. It was also a chance for them to announce a new fund that was to be created in his name to support rainbow communities. So here's Dennis Aberhart speaking at the memorial, and it's followed by a little interview extract with another relative, Nicole Skews Paul.
So on this day, 60 years ago, Uncle Allen was killed by six youths who were all arrested by 7 o'clock the next morning. They admitted they'd come here to attack a queer. Well, they achieved their goal, and because of the beating that Uncle Allen had here, he died. We are grateful for today's blessing from the local iwi. It's brought us together as a whānau. It's brought all these people here together. It's even got the mayor away from his digger and from the office and things, which is really great. And in this great city of Christchurch, that we've come here under these trees where Uncle Allen was killed, and to remember that. But the people here are looking to make a difference. And I think that's what the important thing, and that's what Uncle Allen would love, the fact that people are trying to make a difference out of a horrible situation. For most of the family, and I've been in Christchurch almost since Adam was a cowboy, but for 40 years I moved here, I have not been here. So for me, and for our whānau, to do that, it's special to be able to come and do that. This man did make a difference, and he will continue to make a difference if we remember him.
If you had a chance to say something to Allen now, what would that be?
That I'm proud to be his ancestor in both blood and in the queer community, that I'm really proud of him, and that I know on some level he was proud too, actually. And that I'm sorry that it took his loss of life for so much change to have occurred, but that in his name so much positive change and agitation and struggle came forth, and that every queer person has benefited from that ever since.
The memorial event for Allen Aberhart also highlighted that hate crimes towards rainbow community members are still happening. And one way to draw attention to such hate is through continued visibility and protest. In March 2024, the annual Pride Hikoi took place in Wellington, and it marched from Civic Square to Parliament. And this time, participants marched for three things: mana takatapui, empowering Indigenous rainbow identities; Toitū Te Tiriti, honouring the treaty; and Free Palestine. And this is really highlighting the connection between local and global justice issues. So at the end of the hikoi, they had a range of speakers in Parliament grounds, and one of them was Afi Marshall, who we'll hear from next. And that's followed by just some of the chants that we heard during the hikoi.
This beautiful space here, surrounded by your whānau āniwaniwa, is a safe space to grieve. Grieve for Palestine, for the tens of thousands of pēpi, tamariki, rangatahi, pakeke, koeke, matua that we've lost. Grieve for the land that we've lost, that's been destroyed, that's been bombed. Grieve for our whānau takatāpui who should be here with us today but aren't. Grieve for Nix Benedict and all those lost to transphobic and queerphobic violence. Take the time you need. Grieve for the loss of our progress under this kāwanatanga kākiwhiro. Grieve, cry, feel, but then fight. Fight like hell. Feel your grief in its entirety. Don't let it immobilize you forever. Use it to fuel you. Let it radicalize you, not lead you to hopelessness. We owe it to Palestinians, to Māori, to future generations, not to despair and give up. Kia mate ururoa, kei mate whiki.
Queer rights are human rights.
Trans rights are human rights.
Honor to dignity.
Love and white supremacy.
Yes for Gaza.
Yes against genocide.
Queers for Gaza.
And the focus of this year's Pride Hikoi, which is on the 23rd of March in Wellington, is on access to gender-affirming healthcare, and it's particularly in light of the government's push to restrict access to puberty blockers.
Yes, in one sense our timing isn't quite right because although we mentioned this, you haven't yet got a lot of stuff on this. As unfortunately predicted, the dreaded CAS report, which I did a full programme on a few months ago, is spreading throughout the world, and even countries that seemed initially to be very critical of that report, like Australia and New Zealand, are beginning to wobble. That will be an important development, but one that's really coming after we've been able to record. There's also, vaguely related to this, is Brian Tamaki, as well as one of our old enemies from ACT in the olden days as an ACT MP, Stephen Franks, who is joining in on this. So this is all building up, and I won't even mention the United States, which is just horrendous at the moment, but it might be a good opportunity for you to do a special during the year on these specific topics.
Interrelated, absolutely. I mean, there's so much on this year, and we're just coming into the Pride season in Wellington. I think this gets broadcast a bit later than when Pride will have finished. But yes, there'll be hikois, parades, discussions, a lot going on.
Good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of politics, and last year I was fortunate to interview Grant Robertson on his retirement as a Labour Member of Parliament. So Grant began working at Parliament in 2001 before becoming a Member of Parliament in 2008, and then he would later go on to become the Minister of Finance and Deputy Prime Minister. In this interview, he highlights some of the major social changes in his lifetime and shared some personal experiences as a Rainbow politician.
I was very fortunate that my involvement in the Labour Party and then in turn in becoming an MP was here in Wellington Central. And, you know, I remember one of my friends once joked, it's the only electorate in the country where it's an advantage to be gay. I don't think that's quite true, but, you know, like, I think it was never an issue here locally ever, which was great. Then subsequently, when I did run to be the leader of the party, and by the stage where, you know, 2013, 2014, there's no doubt that in the first campaign, particularly in 2013, it was an issue, and it was raised in different ways, some overt, some covert, but clearly an issue. That was the, you know, is New Zealand ready for a gay prime minister?
Yes.
Of course, and, you know, like the stupidity of that even being a question. But, you know, I have this memory of that. So the 2013 Labour leadership campaign, we did like about 12 or 13 public meetings around the country with Labour members. And we did one down in Christchurch in 2013. And I remember I felt quite pleased with how it performed that night. I thought I gave a really good speech and I answered the questions well, and I got good reaction from the audience, and there was this couple, gay couple, who came up to me, who I knew, and said, "Oh, you were so good, you were wonderful." And then just sort of as we were parting, they said, "Oh, we're not actually going to vote for you, though, to be the leader of the Labour Party." And I sort of said, "Sorry." And they said, "Oh, we're just not sure that, you know, for Labour, having a gay leader would be good for us," and blah, blah, blah. And I was, you know, devastated by that, because clearly there was an internalisation of homophobia there. We don't embrace people's diversity. And I've talked about this probably with you more than once. I don't like the word tolerance, because to me the word tolerance sounds like you're putting up with something, you're tolerating it. Whereas I think as a country we will be so much better off if we embrace diversity, and be that sexuality or gender or race or whatever it is. And that's kind of makes me even sadder, that yeah, you can be pigeonholed, you can be boxed up. And in many ways, I guess that's one of the things I've tried to do over the years, is not allow that to happen too much for me. And even right at the end of being a minister for years, every now and then it would pop up saying, "Is Grant Robertson really gay?" You know, this kind of thing. It's like, so, you know, it's sort of, I've tried in a way to be the opposite. I was in the Crazy Knights and the gay rugby team that started here. Tried to be a part of trying to break some of those stereotypes down, but you're absolutely right. It's really sad that people can't judge a whole person and, well, not judge, but, you know, accept a whole person, but rather judge them for one aspect.
And that's Grant Robertson. And Grant retired from national politics in March 2024 and is now the Vice-Chancellor of the University of Otago. Well, in May last year, the US Embassy in New Zealand hosted Judy and Dennis Shepherd. Judy and Dennis are the parents of Matthew Shepherd, who was brutally killed in Wyoming, USA in October 1998. The killing really resonated with rainbow communities right around the world. And after Matthew's death, Judy and Dennis formed the Matthew Shepherd Foundation to embrace the dignity and equality of all people. Well, I was incredibly fortunate to be able to interview Judy and Dennis and asked how they balanced talking about Matthew publicly, which they've done for the last 20 plus years, while holding onto private memories of him. And it begins with Dennis Shepherd.
Everybody talked about Matthew. And we talked about Matt. That's the difference. Matt is our son or brother or friend. Matthew is somebody that represents the LGBTQ community and the violence and lack of respect and equality. So we are able to keep Matt separate in a way by talking about Matt. In a way, it also helped us grieve, because after we lost Matt, I went back to Saudi Arabia to work. Judy stayed in Wyoming to start the foundation, and our younger son went back to boarding school. So we never did get to grieve together. And I think for us it was probably beneficial that way, because even when you're together, you really aren't grieving together. You all have everybody has their separate memories and reasons for mourning the loss of that person, whether personal or professional, whatever it might be. So by talking about Matt as we do, using him as an example of what needs to be done, not just in America, but around the world when we travel, to try and make it better for everybody, it keeps him alive, keeps him fresh where he wouldn't be otherwise. So we always have Matt with us.
One of the really lovely things I came across online was a poem written by Matt called "I Am," and just reading that, I get glimpses of his personality. And I'm wondering, can you talk to me about the poem and then possibly read it for me?
We found after Matt passed, we collected his things from his apartment. We found several. Matt was not a very organized person, and we found many notebooks where he had made jots of thoughts, and I guess some people are considering it poetry. I consider it scribblings.
I consider it journaling. The way he journaled.
He just
about life and him.
We'd write down things as they came to him, and not any kind of organized pattern. So, I don't know if he, these are his own thoughts at some point in time in his life. So the poem begins, I am sensitive.
I am honest.
I am sincere.
I am not a pest.
I am my own person.
I am warm.
I am funny, nice.
Hopeful, energetic, giving.
Understanding, sometimes selfish, sincere.
Generous, irritable, gay.
Cute, interesting, intelligent.
Poor, humble, and outgoing.
I am Matthew Shepard.
I am Matthew Shepard.
That's Dennis and Judy Shepard reading I Am, a poem written by their son Matthew Shepard. And a few months after that interview, the poem featured in the choral work Considering Matthew Shepard, and it was performed in New Zealand for the very first time by the Wellington Youth Choir and the Christchurch Youth Choir.
Matthew's also got into the news indirectly a little bit recently. For many years, his ashes were just kept by his parents. They wanted to put them somewhere and for there to be a memorial, but they were worried that almost wherever they put it, it would be defaced or something. Anyway, there was then negotiation to have it in the National Cathedral in Washington, where it was duly put, I forget, a little while back now. But the bishop who was responsible for sorting all that out was the same one that gave the lovely sermon that so outraged the president and the vice president of the United States when they had to sit there and listen and be told to be nice. So I thought that was rather nice. She obviously...
That's fascinating. I hadn't heard that that's where his ashes were.
Yes.
Well,
yep.
Yeah. Well, in August 2024, a very special pōwhiri took place at Te Papa, the Museum of New Zealand. It marked the gifting of taonga treasures from the late Georgina Beyer into the care of the museum. So Georgina is internationally famous for being the world's first openly transgender mayor and also Member of Parliament, and she passed away in 2023. And then in March 2024, friends and whānau gathered in Wellington to honour her. And at that occasion was Karen. Karen is Georgina's sister. And in this part of the interview, she talks about meeting Georgina for the very first time 40 years ago.
It was a really special occasion because I not only met Georgina for the first time, but I met my birth father, our birth father. So it all took place at the same time, as well as meeting our birth father's family. So there were a lot of people to meet first time. But I always knew growing up by my adopted family that I had an older brother. And so I just had imagined this older brother in a similar vein to me. And then when I met her in person, I've only ever had a sister. I never knew her as a brother. She's always been my sister. So it was a very special weekend that we met for the first time. And then we would catch up with her on occasion in the coming years. So that was that 40 years ago.
Another really significant moment was last year at Georgina's memorial. That must have been... I can't imagine what that must have been like for you as a whānau being there.
It was very special to be there, and a number of whānau from both our mother's side of the family as well as our father's side of the family attended, and we all sat together. So that was really special because, you know, for us, she was whānau. Didn't mean that we spent a lot of time together, but she's whānau, and for my children that were there, this is their auntie. And so it was a really moving occasion, and to listen to all the speakers from people that knew her better than we did, it was really lovely to sit there and to be a part of all of that, to celebrate her life. So, it was a really moving evening for all of us that were there representing her whānau.
Mm. Now, today we saw the gifting of some of Georgina's taonga to Papa. And I'm wondering, what is your wish for the taonga that are held now within Te Papa? What is your wish for that taonga?
they've been entrusted to Te Papa, and they have received them with such great respect, and they will honour her through their care of her taonga and the way that they will share and make available to the public to be able to participate in Georgina's life through her taonga. Lots of photos, there were photo albums, a particular garment that was special for Georgina. So they tell a story about this remarkable person, you know. And so to have it all entrusted to Te Papa is a safe place because the story will live on. Mm.
That's Karen Morris, sister of the late Georgina Beyer.
It's interesting that along with one or two other things like Mr. Eberhardt, came up in this in the recent TVNZ series Queer at Aotearoa by Eli Mathewson. And one point he made was that he really doubted whether Georgina would have got elected as an openly transgender person anymore, because of the whole change in atmosphere in recent years, which may sadly and unfortunately be true.
Gosh, yes, it's quite sobering to think.
Yeah,
think on that. That was an amazing series.
Yes, yes, it was very well put together. Much better than anything we've had for years, really.
Yeah. Well, another way of keeping rainbow histories alive is through the Rainbow List Project. Now, the project started in 2021, and it aims to incorporate rainbow stories into Heritage New Zealand's official heritage list of buildings and locations. It's not only about uncovering rainbow connections to buildings that are already on the list, but also it's about adding new places that are specifically rainbow-related. So here's part of an interview with Kieran Pollock. Kieran is one of the senior advisors at Heritage New Zealand, and this was recorded in September last year.
At the moment, there are 35 list entries under the Rainbow List theme. All but two of them were existing list entries. And the more that we find out about places having a queer story or history, the more sort of what we call upgrades we can do. I would love to do more new listings where the queer story is the reason or one of the reasons why it meets the threshold for a heritage place. The first one we did was Dygan's Building in Whanganui, so that's the Charles Mackey building where the shooting occurred when he was being blackmailed for being homosexual. That is the fundamental reason why that is on our heritage list. It's an otherwise pretty unremarkable Edwardian building with a pretty ordinary history. The Charles Mackey story elevates it, and it's actually a Category 1 listing, which means that's outstanding. That's a hugely important story in our queer history, as you know. So I would love to be able to do more of those, and we definitely have had nominations for more, but we've run into difficulties with owners who don't want their buildings to be recognised as heritage. It's very frustrating. The other recent one we've got is a building called Home Crafts on Molesworth Street. That's a Chapman Taylor Walter Chapman Taylor was an arts and craft architect. That was his showroom. It's now a pub called Chapman Taylor's. And I discovered when we were doing the list entry for that a creative called Theodore Trezees owned that for a time, and he possibly lived there with his mother. So that's a more sort of, that's just a sort of moment in time for that building. His occupancy and ownership of it is not sort of what makes it a heritage place, but it's part of the story. And so that's what we do with Rainbow List, is that it's all about storytelling. So even if, you know, the queer story is not super significant or highly important or long-standing, we can still make sure it's in the story or the narrative we tell about a place. It's really important to me that we don't rule out queer stories that seem small or passing. They have their place.
That's Kieran Pollock, Senior Advisor at Heritage New Zealand, talking about the Rainbow List Project. Well, it's about the end of the show. We've just got one time for one more clip, and this comes from a parliamentary breakfast to mark World AIDS Day. Now, a similar event has taken place annually in Australia since 2010, but this is the first time it had occurred in New Zealand. The breakfast brings together a diverse group of people and organisations committed to combating HIV and AIDS, along with current members of Parliament. It really is a chance to talk about the current state of HIV and AIDS in New Zealand, but also to reflect on the last 40 years. And somebody right at the start of the HIV response was David Miller, who was working in the early 1980s.
I'm an AIDS dinosaur. I trained in Aotearoa, New Zealand, as a clinical psychologist, but I worked in that capacity in St Mary's Hospital in central London. On the 9th of August 1983, I was asked to work with a young man on our infectious diseases ward there who had pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Meeting Adrian started over 20 years of total commitment to HIV as a clinician, then as a public health specialist in WHO and UNAIDS. I worked with people living with HIV and health practitioners all over Europe, North America, Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. And as was said, I authored a report on HIV services in this country, 14 years ago. Most of my work, though, was in the pre-treatment era of HIV, a period of intense fear, stigma, and of clinical revolution, for example, in community and patient engagement, diagnostic and treatment protocols, and social license to discuss sex and death. The 1980s was also a decade of courage. Courage is a vital element in safeguarding the health of the public. Public health is like a finely woven korowai. It's composed of many threads, including vital considerations of gender, ethnicity, culture, law, education, politics, finance, innovation, technology, security, integrity, empathy, love, and courage. Courage is key because the challenge in the global HIV/AIDS experience has always been stigma, as we've heard. That's what made the coalesced communities at risk in the United States, in the UK, in New Zealand, Northern Europe, Africa, Asia, or in fact globally, such brave acts. Those most affected stood up. Listening to a 1985 radio interview with Bruce Burnett the other day, I was struck by his extraordinary empathy and concern for patient confidentiality because of stigma surrounding AIDS. It may not always feel like it, but New Zealand community groups have changed the world very much for the better by successfully arguing for homosexual law reform in 86, establishing the world's first state-sponsored national needle exchange program in 87, and decriminalizing sex work in 2003. At the very least, stigma had become delegitimized through such acts.
David Miller speaking at New Zealand's inaugural World AIDS Day parliamentary breakfast held in December 2024. And Tony, that's our retrospective from Pride NZ for this year.
Thank you very much, Gareth. And I've just been told that we've managed to fill the total allotted 30 minutes. So I've got nothing else to do except say thank you very much for another annual visit. And we look forward to, or don't look forward in some ways, to what you will be talking about next time. You can hear this programme again next Tuesday at 9 p.m. or Thursday at 5 p.m. It is also available on our website at www.coastaccessradio.org.nz or just Google Coast Access Radio. Kapiti Gay. This is Tony Reid for GAY on at Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.